You're looking at a lot of enhancements in SIP, some fairly radical changes in what the IP packets look like. How do you think we're going to be making that transition? Is there a strategy that you've come up with that will make a transition from IP to SIP?
Certainly. It usually goes under the rubric of IPA. This is IP address encapsulation, which is kind of a clumsy name and not quite an accurate name. But this is work primarily attributable to Bob Hinden and Dave Crocker, who basically specified a scheme before SIP was invented to tunnel to in introduce larger addresses, and then to be able to send packets that carry those larger addresses through the existing infrastructure by encapsulation or tunneling. And as I was talking about before with the M-bone, this allows the piecemeal and gradual introduction of machines that understand the bigger addresses into the existing internet. The scheme they had come up with, in fact, did not ever get away from doing that encapsulation. They sort of saw that they would build this, and you would now have packets would always carry this IP header around some header that carries bigger addresses. But Bob Gilligan of that group, of the IPA group, recognized that the header they had that was carrying the big addresses looked very much like the SIP header. And geez, if only they'd use SIP, then you could think of transitioning to a clean final state where, in fact, you weren't doing encapsulation anymore, and you were back to a straight, simple header with bigger addresses in it, writing directly on top of the link level. So that's a very important part of the SIP work is trying to make it so that it's a fairly easy transition path.
Is there ever a flag day? Is there ever a day when everybody has to be doing something else?
No, absolutely not. And that's the updating can up the introduction of the new capabilities can happen in any order. You can update just the boundary routers first and immediately get some benefit with the wide area scaling of routing. You can update hosts without any routers being updated. They just tunnel through the existing part. You can update interior routers within a domain but not the hosts, or you can do a whole domain pretty much in any order, and different parts of the internet can do things in different orders. The only real flag day in any of this, and it applies to any of the new IP candidates, is the day the IP network number space runs out.
In other words, once they become non-unique
Right.
or you can't assign another one.
Right. And by the time you get to that stage, you have to have all of the machines that you wish to continue to communicate globally have to be upgraded to the new machine.
But a local thing, for example, a printer that would never be accessible from the outside world could continue to use a plain old IP address forever?
Yes. And as part of the transition mechanisms, there's a combination of mechanisms, sometimes involving encapsulation and sometimes translation. The translation allows a SIP-only host, a pure SIP host, to talk to an IP-only host, and so that it's not necessary to carry around the baggage of IP forever to be able to talk to this old printer. And you can imagine people bringing out, SIP light switches, where the overhead of doing both SIP and IP in the light switch would be too high, but SIP would be okay.
You never know if light switch advances.
Yeah, I know we'll have light switches with gigabytes of memory.
You've been looking at the very contentious issue of addresses. Obviously, an IP packet is much more than just the address, but the thing that prompted a lot of this is the address space running out. How long do you think we have until that 32-bit IP space is gone? Do you have any idea?
Haven't a clue.
Do you think it's a year, 10 years?
More than a year, less than 10 years, but I don't think anyone knows.
Is it urgent enough that we need to come up with a solution right away, or can we sit back and wait and see what the best solution is?
There is some urgency, but I don't think it's, that we have to have some, we're not going to run out at the end of this year. And there are, if the way the addresses are being handed out now, some of the procedure has improved, the CIDR approach, where blocks of Class C, contiguous Class C addresses are being handed out in a chunk. That's all good work. If in fact that doesn't buy us enough time, there are other things we could do, such as causing certain parts of the internet to renumber. And if people think that causing renumbering is something that's impossible to do, I don't know how we're ever going to get them to install a new IP.
How hard is it to renumber? I know in my home network of 6 nodes, if I had to renumber, I'd do it. Is that really such a big deal to just say everybody's got to change?
Oh, yeah, it's a pretty big deal at a at a place like this or on a university campus. I think of all the places where IP addresses are embedded in hosts and hosts are embedded in closets and places you don't know, and it's pretty painful. And that's sort of one aspect that we'd like to do better the next time around.
And so renumbering is really something that you'd like to avoid.
But as I say, it still seems, strikes me as, well, maybe there is a way in which renumbering is worse than upgrading your software, because renumbering does pretty much, well, depending on how you do it, could indicate it, could require a flag day, whereas upgrading the software, as I said, could be done piecemeal.
As to how we build addresses, you've advocated a scheme based on metro areas, basically on cities, if you will. Could you explain that way of assigning addresses?
Okay. The motivation for it was there were existing proposals, and I first came to this problem in the context of NSAPs, sort of proposals for how to assign NSAPs, which indicated that a site or a subscriber to the CLNP internet would obtain a prefix, an address prefix, from a local service provider. And then all of the clients of that service provider would have the same prefix. You could aggregate all those sites into one route advertisement that went between providers.
So that's provider-based address assignments.
Right. So all the customers of Barnett would be identified by a unique prefix, which identified them as Barnett, and the rest of the world wouldn't have to keep a single individual route to Xerox. They would keep a route to Barnett. And that's a swell scheme. The only drawback is that if Xerox decides it wants to switch its service from Barnett to some other provider, we have to change all our addresses. And I just talked about how painful it can be to renumber.
What if you want service from both?
Well, the provider-based scheme requires you to have an address from both, and so your hosts, your internal hosts, become multi-homed, or at least they have multiple IP addresses.
And every one of your internal hosts has to be multi-homed.
Everyone that you wish to be accessible by either of the, or you know, by all of the providers you're attached to. Now the way to, so the motivation for doing this was the whole issue, all these proposals for introducing bigger addresses in to IP is currently we have an address space where we give every individual site or subscriber their own network number, and that's just a big flat space of network numbers, and that's where the scaling problem is because we can no longer afford to advertise all those globally, and the way we know how to deal with them is to aggregate them into larger clusters, and aggregating them into all of the clients of a single provider is one way of clustering, and so I thought, well, is there another way of clustering that would not require this, would not lock you into your current provider, would not make you pay the penalty of having to change all your addresses if you switch to another provider. And I started thinking about mainly in the context of the telephone system, because telephone system sort of at one level looks like it's doing geographical addressing. The 415 area code is the San Francisco Peninsula. But you look at it and you can't really tell if that's a provider-based address or a geographical address, because there's only one service provider in the 415 area code, that specific Bell. And so what would happen if a second, if we're actually to support competition for local phone service, not just long distance phone service, but local phone service, what would have to happen? Certainly, if I had to change my phone number when I switched to the competitor, Pacific Bell, that would be a real disincentive for me to switch. I thought, with the current sort of level of technology, you know, disks and memory and so on being cheap, it wouldn't be that hard to have a single database of all 10 million phone numbers in the 415 area code, which was a mapping from this phone number to who the provider is, and perhaps to that provider's local switch that serves me, such that I could keep my phone number when I changed. It would mean updating a database. It's a database that all of the providers, the competing providers, would update and have to share access to. And that had a clear analog in the internet problem, which is, if instead of identifying Xerox as a customer of Barnett, we identify Xerox as one of the internet sites in the San Francisco Bay Area, then that will also give an aggregation of all the customers in the San Francisco Bay Area. Xerox no longer has to be advertised as a single individual globally, just San Francisco Bay Area has to. And so I would have an address which was of the form probably what country I was in, then what metropolitan area, which is what sort of major center of commerce, radiating out till it reaches the next center of commerce, then a site ID of some sort within that metropolitan area, and then low order bits by which I do addressing and numbering of my subnets hosts internally.
So is that assigning addresses based on the topography of the internet?
Topography?
Topology?
Yeah. This is a good question, because it's a subject of lots of debate of whether the requirement, the downside. Okay, so the good side of metro-based addressing is that you don't have to change your address when you change providers in the same city. There still are, if you move to a different city, you have to change your addresses. But it was sort of the prediction. What I'm predicting is that we hope we'll get an internet in which there are lots of competitive local providers. And it'll be quite common for users, for sites, households or corporations or campuses or whatever, to switch their providers occasionally, just like the people currently switch between different long-distance carriers in this country. And now, so that's the good side. The bad side is that it requires that all of the providers serving the same metropolitan area interconnect with each other. I mentioned in the phone analogy that there was a shared database that all the phone companies had to maintain. The requirement for the interconnection is a basic rule of hierarchical addressing, that if a packet gets delivered into the San Francisco Bay Area over some provider's facilities, once it arrives in the San Francisco Bay Area, it has to be able to get to the provider that's serving the destination without going back outside of San Francisco metropolitan area, because if it goes back, it'll just come right back in where it came before. And so every hierarchical cluster in a hierarchical addressing scheme has to be internally connected. And I imagine that happening, the sort of most straightforward way is for the way currently there are Fix East and Fix West are the federal internet exchanges where a number of providers come together on a common subnet, exchange routes, and exchange data. Traffic flows over those interconnection points. And I imagine the establishment of one or more of those in every metropolitan area.
A metropolitan internet exchange, a mix.
A mix.
This is Geek of the Week, featuring interviews with prominent members of the technical community. Geek of the Week is brought to you by O'Reilly & Associates and by Sun Microsystems.